Hello and welcome to Open Room Talks, a podcast which draws on open room events experience in connecting people to bring you quality discussions between industry experts, innovative suppliers, and high-powered end users on pertinent issues in a variety of sectors. Hello, I am Kiana Sapp, and joining me today for our fourth episode, I have Ian Gordon and Richard Greenwood. Ian qualified as a dentist in 1984 and worked in the Northeast since he graduated, establishing two groups of dental practices over that period, the most recent of which is Alpha Vitality Group. This group became the platform investment for Riverdale Healthcare, of which he is now a director. Riverdale is backed by Apposite Capital and has expanded its initial platform from 10 sites to 16. Ian retains a clinical role alongside management, with the group being led clinically and operationally by himself and his former partners in Alpha. Richard is the founder of Radicate, a leading clean air technology company that boasts the widest certified clean air technology range for indoor environments. Radicate is partnered with INB Air, who are based out of South Korea, and in response to the 2003 SARS coronavirus outbreak, INB Air received government funding to innovate the virus killer air technology product range. Richard heads up the global innovation for Radicate INB Air and is helping lots of people deal with airborne viruses in over 20 countries and in many different sectors, including medical and dental. Thank you both so much for joining me.
Not a problem.
Thank you, Kiana.
Richard, reading your bio just then gives me the impression that the past few months must have been rather busy for you.
That's an understatement, really. I could do with a few clones right now or a few more days in the week.
I bet. So, Ian, to kick us off, why don't you tell us a little bit about why Radicate's product offerings are of interest to you?
Yeah, I think like many of us, we were looking around very early on for solutions to the problem. It tends to be a trait of clinicians that we like to find solutions, and we're pragmatists, and that's our focus. So very early on, I was on a Facebook forum for dentists and saw a discussion around clean air technology, and in particular Radicate. There was an invite on there to a webinar Saturday morning. I suspect it was probably maybe a week into lockdown. I've lost complete track of time. I don't know whether anybody else has, but I believe it was at the end of March. Richard presented very eloquently and scientifically on that webinar. And I have to say, I was either very impressed or brainwashed or both, but I came away with the notion certainly that this was worth looking at, both from the science appeared to work, but also the perception and thinking about it from a patient and from our team's point of view, answering the question, what were we doing about COVID, what we were doing about their safety going forwards. So that made me follow up the webinar with a call or an email to Richard, which then resulted in a conversation and then eventually an order from Riverdale for quite a number of units. This was quite early on, I think we did this, Richard, wasn't it?
That's right. I think you are the first dental group that approached us and subsequently bought from us, yeah.
So, Richard, why don't you tell us a little bit about how the technology works and how it compares to other potential solutions in this domain?
Okay. I think the most common form of clean air technology is air purification, and that's using mechanical filters like HEPA filters, activated carbon filters, and these filters are typically placed within some sort of container with a fan. The idea being that lots of particles will be trapped in the filters and then producing a cleaner air environment. The real issue with filtration is that the particle size that you can trap is limited by and large to about 0.3 microns. And viruses are much smaller than that. So although HEPA filtration, which is the most common form of filtration, will have an effect on viruses, there are independent studies out there showing that viruses will penetrate HEPA filters. And therefore, if they're penetrating the filter, then the machine those filters are in can release those viruses back into the breathing zone, creating a potential hazard. I think the second thing to note about air purification and filtration devices is that you can trap bacteria, mold, fungus on these filters, along with organic matter, such as dust particles, etc., which is a food source. So microbial growth happens on HEPA filters very quickly, especially in humid environments, such environments you can find in dental surgeries. So for me, the air purification side of things is important to deal with particles down to 0.3 microns in size. But HEPA filters were designed and made in 1940, and technology's moved on a little. So the second part of clean air technology is air sterilization. And quite typically, ultraviolet radiation is used in this part. The difficult aspect with ultraviolet radiation is that when you're pushing air past it at volume, like when you have a fan that's blowing air past any UV lights in order to do an air exchange in a place like a dental surgery, you don't necessarily have the time it takes for the ultraviolet radiation to sterilize any microbial pollution, such as viruses. And with viruses, the UV radiation will break the RNA and rendering it ineffective. So the technology has to come into play where you look at what is out there on the market and think, okay, filtration has its uses, certainly within places like medical facilities and dental facilities. And sterilization, when done properly, also has its uses. And the key for me with the IMB Air technology, when I joined them late 2016, early 2017, is that it was the first technology I'd seen anywhere in the world that did both things and put them together properly. And keep in mind that the IMB Air technology was funded by the South Korean government after the SARS coronavirus in 2003, because they wanted to be prepared for any future pandemics. And that also kind of correlates really with how have South Korea managed to flatten the coronavirus curve so effectively and quickly. Well, they were prepared. It's not purely and simply the fact that they have installed hundreds of thousands of the virus killer technology, but in all aspects, they were prepared. So going back to now what we do as a company and the Radicate virus killer range, we start with filtration, and then any particles that get through those filters, we then have to sterilize them in our reactor chamber. And the process we use here is called photocatalytic oxidation. So that is ultraviolet radiation combined with titanium dioxide that creates something called hydroxyl radicals. So you've got this chamber full of layers of ultraviolet radiation and these titanium dioxide tubes creating UV and oxidation in a very effective way. We maximize reflection and refraction within that chamber. So we're amplifying the power. And then finally, for things like viruses, which can get through filters, the only way you can give a kill rate, the same as you can give a kill rate on surfaces or on your hands, is by testing on a single air pass, on a single pass of killing that virus. So with our technology, it's a single air pass. And we used the best and brightest minds in South Korea to test our technology and achieved on a single air pass against all respiratory virus groups, including coronavirus, influenza virus, poliovirus, and adenovirus, a 99.9999% kill rate on a single air pass. So very important if a medical professional or a dentist is looking to get technology that's going to be effective against viruses, including this coronavirus, you must find test results that aren't tested in the chamber, but they are single air pass test results. And that's important because in a chamber, you could quite literally hang up a wet tea towel with a fan, and all those virus particles will be attached to that tea towel over time. So a kill rate is done with a single air pass. And the second and really important part to this is, in order to get any of that contaminated air into any specific unit, you have to control the airflow. And you want to take it away from people and out of that breathing zone. You then want to process it and kill any virus that's in the air before you put it back out into that breathing zone. So airflow is really important, and it's another aspect that a lot of people get wrong. You shouldn't just go and buy something like a filtration device and put it anywhere in the room, because that airflow has an effect of potentially where that contaminated air is going. It needs to be specified and it needs to be installed in the right place so that you're controlling the flow of air, and as quickly as possible, you're taking any pathogens out of the breathing zone to process through your technology before you disperse clean air back into the breathing zone. So just to recap what we do and what we do very well with the virus killer technology range is, one, we control the flow of air, and two, we kill viruses on a single air pass, so we know that the air we're putting back into the breathing zone is virus-free and therefore danger-free.
Richard, that's a really helpful recap for me, and brings back into focus the reasons why I was very interested in the technology. What has happened since, and you'll probably recognize this, that the dental profession has become a bit polarized, as it often can be. There's people like myself who believe this technology is the future, and there's others who detract from it, either because they're not aware of Radicate and they're just aware of generic air purification. And I think I forwarded you an email yesterday from one of my good friends and colleagues who is an academic as well as a clinician, saying, you know, well, where's the evidence other than the evidence that you see on these companies' websites? Could you discuss that at all?
Absolutely. So as I said just previously, there's lots of ways that tests can be conducted. And the standard way to do a test on any air filtration or clean air technology device is by putting your device in a chamber, then adding the pollution to that chamber and seeing how quickly that your device will get rid of any pollution, whether that's microbial pollution, whether it's gases, particulate matter. But the reality is that when something can be deadly, let's face it, it's not good enough to say within 20, 30, 40 minutes, there are no viruses left in that chamber. You have to test these on a single air pass so you know that if I don't kill these viruses, what then happens within that room? So am I putting them back out there and they're spreading? And I think because this is an unregulated market right now, it's very easy for every piece of technology to go and say, we are the panacea against COVID-19. That's just not the case. I mean, I don't want to start naming technologies that people should steer clear from. That's just not the right thing to do. No. But I am very passionate about going out there and saying, look, you really need to do your research on this, because an air purifier that has been designed to trap particles and dust, and to some extent with an activated carbon filter, a certain amount of gases and VOCs, they haven't been designed to trap viruses or certainly kill viruses. But because this is what everybody wants right now, all of a sudden those units that aren't fit for purpose in my eyes are going out there and saying, yes, we will really help in this current situation against viruses. And they're cropping up in the medical sector and certainly in the dental sector every day. We're seeing distributors and representatives constantly saying, can you have a look at this technology and tell me how it compares? And the reality is we've yet to see something that is actually being designed as a virus killer for the air. So I can't recommend highly enough, please do your research before spending your money, because it's not only something that won't work as well, It's something that potentially is not going to keep you, your staff and your patients safe.
Which is an element of speaking to the converted, because that was my view as well. The danger, as I can see it, is that all of these products, including your own, get lumped together in one generic statement that air purification doesn't work. There's no evidence for it. So therefore, it shouldn't be considered. Do you think there's things that you can do to perhaps even influence the NHS to suggest that this particular product would be part and should be part indeed of the standard operating procedure to enhance the turnaround time for a surgery?
Well, absolutely. I think the point to this is that before this situation that we're in currently, only really two of the four disease transmission routes were taken seriously in the UK, and that's direct contact and indirect contact. And as we know, that when the COVID-19 situation came around, people were saying exactly that. It's direct contact and indirect contact. It then went into large droplets, and large droplets that will fall to the surface immediately. Large droplets can't be created without those smaller droplets that will hang around in the air. There's a very fine line between saying micro droplets and airborne or aerosolized particles, because they're still droplets, only smaller. So again, if we look at the history to this, and countries like South Korea, who adopt clean air technologies in all medical settings, lung examination rooms, universities, schools, everywhere, well, they're pioneering best practice of infection control. And surely it's situations like this where we need to look at the places and the countries who are doing it right and who are managing to control this virus in the best possible way. And take a wider view. Yes, you had good virus testing, and yes, there was great tracing of virus and great critical response from the people of that country. But what else are you doing? And what other technologies are you using? And when you think that even the COVID-19 task force in South Korea, the first thing they did when they set up their offices is install our virus killer technology, because it's part of a solution. It's not the full solution. We can't say that there is no danger if you install this technology, but it's part of best practice. And I think this has to be taken forward from here on in as good infection control not only needs to be good for direct contact and indirect contact disease transmission routes, but airborne and droplet disease transmission routes also. And it is for COVID-19, but it's also for any other virus or bacterial infection as well. It's just best infection control practices.
I guess if we row back to not long after I qualified and the AIDS epidemic was starting to be obviously of serious significance, and some of the most radical changes in cross-infection control came in the late 80s, early 90s for dentistry. And certainly in very early years of qualifying, it would be extracting teeth, and forceps might have gone through a hot air oven or through a chlorhexidine bath. And for someone to suggest it would need to go through a vacuum autoclave would have seemed absolutely preposterous. But of course, that is quite rightly the standard operating procedure. Do you think there's analogies there that actually we're just a long way behind the curve, and you could get the situation where this would be seen as best practice that we need to achieve?
I think so. I think this virus is going to change the way we view infection control, and not only medical professionals or dentists. I think everybody is going to view infection control in a different way. Everybody is washing their hands more and using, unfortunately, overuse of a lot of chemicals right now, but that's another story. But the reality is that we have to take control of our air. And part of the reason we do is because we're now an indoor generation. We put ourselves in these boxes. And in order to be energy efficient, we seal those boxes. So everything is just going round and round. The biggest cost to most buildings is bringing in fresh air, tempering that air in some fashion. So what they do is they'd rather recirculate the air that's already been tempered. And it's not just indoor air pollution that's 2 to 10 times worse than outdoor air pollution, but also think about the microbial loads within indoor spaces. So we have to look at infection control in a wider way. We have to bring in the cleaning of air, and we have to look at technologies that have advanced simple filtration technologies in order to keep ourselves safe.
So I hinted at the NHS standard operating procedure, which is driving everything that we're doing at present, and anybody has to follow that operating procedure. It needs to be amended and adapted to allow more patients to be treated. And I think it needs to have a minimum standard. And I certainly would not be calling for a Radicate solution to be part of that standard operating procedure, i.e. to be required. But I think if a practice has invested in that, could you present sufficient evidence that the air changes per hour could alter the operating procedures such that more patients per hour could be treated, because that becomes key to any business case that you make for this product.
Absolutely right. And it's also key to people maintaining their business, because if you've got to wait, I'm not sure what the advice is, but I know after aerosolized inducing activities, it's quite a wait that is being put on dentists.
We're talking about an hour, Richard, at the minute.
How can you have a thriving business? It just becomes it's untenable.
I calculated that for one of our larger practices, an 8-surgery practice, we probably had quite regularly 250 patients a day through that practice. And if all 8 surgeries were working on the basis of that SOP, we're looking at 60 patients. It's just absolutely not possible to operate in that way.
That's right. And I think the reality is, if we put clean air technology into a space and we say within this space, we give, say, an air exchange every 7 minutes or so, and we can also then demonstrate this is what happens when we do an air exchange through our technology or let's say a technology like ours, then surely there has to be a case to say, well, we've gone above and beyond to keep everybody safe. We're doing an air exchange within our surgery within 7 minutes. Here's the calculation. Here's the technology. Here's the data. This is the data for what happens when the air goes through this machine. And also following it up with, well, let's do some testing within some of our surgeries and let's prove actually after 7 minutes or 10 minutes or however long, here's the microbial load that's in the air. Is it then safe? Because the reality is that, in my view, you're better having a 10-minute gap with a piece of technology that is pulling the air through and killing any viruses or microbial contamination than an hour gap where you've still got aerosolized particles in the air for way over an hour. So it doesn't quite make sense that is best practice. It's not alleviating the problem. You put aerosolized particles in a chamber and it takes 2 hours or more for those aerosolized particles to disappear naturally with natural ventilation. So you're probably even safer saying we're bringing this time down, but we're using the latest current technology in order to deal with this problem, both for the survival of our business and also for increased infection control. It makes perfect sense.
One of the other questions which keeps being raised is around air conditioning. Again, I've been practicing long enough to remember extremely hot summer days working in surgeries where there was an autoclave and working incredibly difficult and tiring conditions simply because of the heat. And I think many of the people who are planning to go back to work and are reading about the level of PPE they are demanding or is being demanded, and gowns and FFP3 masks perhaps, maybe don't realize just how uncomfortable that could be, particularly if air conditioning isn't allowed. What's your view on the interface between aircon and Radicate?
Well, this question's being asked a lot. Ideally, if you're creating a forced airflow, then you want to have air conditioning systems enhancing that airflow, not countering it. So you do have to think about positioning when there is an AC unit inserted, especially if it's a recirculating air conditioning system.
Which most of them will be in dental surgeries. Most of them will be standalone, smaller units.
That's right. And for that case, you'd have to work with the air conditioning system. So it might alter the positioning of your clean air technology, because you want the air conditioning system to enhance the flow going towards your unit, and also where you're dispersing that clean air. Again, ideally, you'd want to pick up the air conditioning output through that. So specifying it becomes a little bit more complicated. It's a lot to do with common sense, this. But in that instance, it would definitely be checking with the supplier of the clean air technology and asking them, where's best to position it in accordance with those air conditioning units also. We are currently working on some guidelines to try and make this question a little bit easier to answer, and drawings of if AC is here, this is where the best position of your unit should be, things like that.
Could you imagine that the Radicate in a waiting room would alter the flow of patients through a surgery? I'm seeing quite a few standard operating procedures suggesting that patients should wait in the car outside and only be let in one by one. Clearly, whoever wrote it hadn't worked in the northeast of England in winter, because that's not going to be a particularly sustainable patient flow. So do you think it would alter the number of patients you could safely have in a waiting room?
I really do. For communal spaces, restaurants, waiting rooms, we have created a unit that drags down to the ground. So if you're breathing out any pathogen, very quickly it gets dragged down to the ground. And it's quite a tall unit. It distributes clean air above seated head height. So you're getting that circular flow. If somebody had a virus or bacterial infection and they were breathing or coughing or talking, then very quickly that forced airflow would drag that air down to the ground, taking it out of other people's breathing zones. And the distribution then of that clean air back into the breathing zone means that you've got a very effective way of controlling airborne or droplet contamination risk. And the other factor is what we're learning now with COVID-19 is that quite often viruses and pathogens can be walked into spaces. And when they're walked into spaces, in communal areas especially, you can kick up a microbial cloud. And that can then infect surfaces, it can affect people, and you can breathe that in. If you have a forced airflow that is keeping that air low and down to the ground, you're also minimizing the risk there. And I suppose the other question we get asked a lot is, if you have technology such as a virus killer technology in situ, will it reduce surface contamination? And the answer to that is yes. We don't sterilize the surfaces with our equipment, but we stop surface settlement. So certainly those finer droplets, they have to settle somewhere unless they get caught on a forced airstream and dragged into a unit.
Would it be fair to say that supply lines are challenging, or can you meet demand? Are you in a position to build up to meet demand? Because one of the worst things we could do is promote this as being a highly desirable thing to have in practices and then find they weren't available for 6 months and there's no impact on the current situation. So where are you in that position?
We currently manufacture everything in South Korea. We've upped the manufacturing capacity in South Korea, and we're keeping up with demand right now. We are going into lots of new territories and countries, and we've put a new senior management team in place to guide us through that process and to set up new hubs in different countries. We're looking to start manufacturing in the UK in about 3 months' time, and then we'll have a hub in the Middle East and in the US as the second and third manufacturing hub as well. So we've got a growth plan in place right now. We're managing to get orders manufactured within about 2 to 3 weeks. The challenging part for us is getting them from South Korea to wherever they're going. The smaller units like a virus killer 401 that you've ordered lots of for your dental practices, we can fly those in, but the larger units we have to bring in by sea freight, and that's very challenging right now because all freight, air freight and sea freight is quite busy. So the scaling up of manufacturing has happened and will continue to happen. I think it will be a lot easier for us when we're localizing production a little bit as well. But so far, we're coping with the demand. And obviously, if somebody wants to buy a piece of technology that's killing viruses, they don't want to wait for it very long. So we're doing all we can to get those products in situ as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually the case. I mean, I certainly want to make the point that Riverdale Healthcare has made a significant investment in an element of trailblazing on this, and I've certainly put my head on the block in terms of advising this. But, you know, I do want to be able to say that the product is in situ or is about to be in situ. You've got a challenge, I understand, but it's obviously a very high priority to get those supply lines up and running.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely.
Thank you so much for that discussion. I really hate to cut it short because there's so much interesting content for our listeners, but we are reaching our time limit. In the interest of minimizing the amount of editing that I need to do, I will limit my quickfire question to one. So I wanted to ask each of you, and this is something we ask all of our guests on this show, what is the best piece of advice that you've ever received? Ian, I guess we can start with you.
Yeah, I think what I've learned from advice and experiences in business, in negotiations, try and see things from the other person's perspective because it's easier to see where they're coming from. You can form a better position yourself.
That's great advice. And Richard, have you got anything for us?
Yeah, I mean, I've fallen into being an inventor of new technologies and a disruptor of current technologies. And I think my advice would be that unfiltered creativity promotes the best innovation. So dream it and then see if it's possible. Don't be restrained by what people are telling you you can't do.
The art of the possible.
The art of the possible, indeed.
I love that. Well, thank you both so much for joining me today. It's been a terrific discussion and good luck to you, Richard, over the next few weeks. I feel like it's going to be even more busy, but yes, thanks again.
And thanks for the opportunity. Enjoyed that. It's useful.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Keanu. And nice speaking to you again, Ian.
And you.
Thank you for tuning in to Open Room Talks. We hope that you've enjoyed the episode. For inquiries, please feel free to get in touch via email on hello@openroomevents.com. For details on future episodes, please follow us on LinkedIn or visit openroomevents.com. Until next time.